The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ay, señora García, ¿cómo equilibra todo? Es consejera escolar y pionera, madre de dos hijos y estudiante de posgrado. Hace de todo. En National University apoyamos todo lo que haces. Por eso nos dedicamos a apoyar tu crecimiento profesional a través de tutorías personalizadas y servicios de carrera para que puedas enfocarte en lo más importante. National University. Apoyamos todo tu ser. Conoce más en nu.edu/español.
Everybody, welcome to Take the Black Live, the one on the Chilean internet. We talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, horses, swords, robots, space lasers, and owls who are not what they seem. I am Dan Selke of winterscoming.net. You are Dan Roman of winterscoming.net. How are you doing?
True. Everything you just said is very, very true. I'm doing decently. It's been a Tuesday that feels like a Friday, you know. Wait, it's not even Tuesday, is it? It's Wednesday, the day we do our show every week. That's indicative. How are you, Dan? And how are all of you in the chat? Shout us out there. Let us know you're here watching if you are.
Yeah, doing pretty well. As usual, we have lots to talk about. And I think we should start now. But with what? That's the question.
Well, why don't we start with some Westeros stuff? Unless that will make things chaotic. We have some behind the scenes stuff going on. Just if Dan and I seem more hesitant than usual, there are reasons for that. But why don't we start with some Westeros stuff?
Let's do it.
There was an image that came out from this is a behind the scenes image. Dan, I don't know if you know this or any of you out there, but there is a new Game of Thrones prequel series coming this year, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. This one is adapting George R. R. Martin's novella, The Hedge Knight, the first of his Dunk and Egg stories about the knight Sir Duncan the Tall and his irascible squire Egg. Dan, where is this image from? This image made the rounds online, and this is somebody snapped this on set, it looks like.
So far as I can tell, it appeared on IMDb of all places, but I'm not sure, You know, from whence it came exactly. What I like about Knight of Seven Kingdoms, this new Game of Thrones prequel show, is it's all going to be in one place, six tight episodes, all one story. We kind of recognize this now, right? It's a tournament folk in the audience. That we've gotten good vibes, looking forward to it. So we'll have a reset on that one.
Yeah, totally. I'm not sure exactly what we're looking at here. You know, obviously it's a crowd at attorney. I'm sure that they're looking out over a list, but I can't quite see who these peoples are on the balcony. But I'm looking forward to getting more images. I feel like we're overdue some Knight of the Seven Kingdoms images. Because, you know, this show, we don't know exactly when it's dropping, probably sometime later this year.
Yeah.
But so far, there's been like one official image, which is that one that if you are a frequent watcher of this show, which hi there, everybody in the chat. Hi, Chris and Julie and Yingling. If you are a watcher of this show, you've probably seen the image. I think it might have been the thumbnail for this video of like Dunk walking through a market. There are a couple of others that came in like a sizzle reel trailer that HBO dropped, but we haven't gotten any nice crisp stills to sink our teeth into. So probably sometime soon we'll hopefully get those. But A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms isn't the only Westeros news that we have to talk about today. There's also been some rumbles about House of the Dragon season 3. What is going on in House of the Dragon land, Dan?
A few things. So we're going to return to House of the Dragon next year. First, Chris has a pretty good question. Do you think they'll have the same opening credit music? I doubt it. I hope not. I don't know. Actually, I'm kind of split on that. Do you want Under Seven Kingdoms, Daniel, to have the, again, the theme from both Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon? Da, 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 da. Or is it time for something new? I think it's time for something new. I'm going to go ahead and say it.
I think it's time for something new. I don't particularly, I wasn't a fan of the fact that House of the Dragon did that. I don't love that they're like, this is our Game of Thrones franchise, and we've got the one theme song. I think that was kind of a mistake, honestly. I'm with Chris. I want new music. Like, have some confidence in freaking Ramin Djawadi that he can write another theme that can become as well-loved as his Game of Thrones theme. This is Hollywood. We don't hire new people here. Do you want new music? I missed it if you said you did or didn't.
I do, yeah, but I disagree with you. I think it worked for House of the Dragon. I think because at least in the first season, House of the Dragon was really a proper successor to Game of Thrones, had the same kind of scope, sort of epic feeling, sort of dense character drama. I thought it made sense. In fact, I didn't like how they split the baby. I didn't like how they kept the music but had a new intro sequence. My feeling was like, keep the exact same thing, visuals and all, or just have something completely new. I didn't like the half measure, but I didn't mind them keeping the song. But for a new one, it's a different tone, it's a different kind of story completely. Something new would be nice. Speaking of House of the Dragon, word is filming will go from March through October, which is a while. And it will, at long last, I think this will be the first, fingers crossed, season of the show that happens, A, without COVID restrictions in place, and B, without an actors and writers strike interrupting it. I think we don't talk about or think about often enough how aberrant the last 4 years were for the film industry, probably because we're too busy thinking about how aberrant they were for all of us. It's been a lot's happened in the past 4 years.
It's aberrant across the board.
Like, this next crop of stuff will be the first time in a while that TV shows just got to be made and then released without these giant interruptions. So I'm curious what they'll do with, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, 7 full months of filming on a third season of a show. Could be pretty cool. Although, the less exciting news, this is not confirmed. We're getting to the point where we're hearing rumors, everybody. Don't we love that? We're starting to hear rumors, hear whispers about things that are coming. People have their ears to the grounds, their noses to the air, and are picking things up. But it'll probably be, according to House of the Dragons, a pretty reliable, I think, Portuguese language news hound account. That it'll probably be 8 episodes again, which I think is what I expect. That I think Ryan Connell more or less hinted strongly at that. But it does go toward one of the big problems of prestige TV has been having for years now, which is, you know what you're going to do? You're going to wait longer between seasons, and the seasons are going to be shorter.
Yeah, totally. Like you said, I'm not surprised by that news. I am disappointed by it. You know, I was hoping they would go to 10 episodes, but I didn't. It always felt like a vain hope. You know what I mean? Like there was part of me that ever actually believed that was going to happen. And so when you wrote about this on the site today, you talked about, the waiting longer for less. When Game of Thrones was on, it was, 10 episodes every year, and now we're getting 8 episodes every 2 years, which is that's pretty slow when you think about it. I wouldn't say that it's a disappointing update, but it's not really a surprising one. House of the Dragon season three, most likely 8 episodes. I gotta wonder what that means for the overall arc of this thing, though, because like you said in your write-up for this, there are a bunch of battles still to come. There's a bunch, like, major characters haven't even kind of moved into the middle of their story where we are yet, and we're already presumably more than moving past the halfway point of the show. It does also make me nervous for like Hour of the Wolf, which for non-readers, Hour of the Wolf is like a very part of a very long epilogue that the Dance of the Dragons has in the book. So yeah, should we be worried? What do you think?
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate. Which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Now Taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is Taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live, must start and file in app by 2/18.
Yeah, I'm worried. I'll go into it open arms, but my guess is that by the end of this show, this is my guess, this is my feeling as a viewer, is that the show that we get is not going to resemble much the book, is what I think, is what I guess will happen. But I could be wrong. At least they know they have 8 episodes to work with this time, instead of like being cut off in the middle of production like last time.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's good
to know what you actually have to work with and then be able to plan.
Yeah, that obviously makes a difference. The season finale of season 2 of House of the Dragon, it gave me some flashbacks to the 2008, whatever the writer's strike before was, when Lost was on. There were a bunch of shows during that one, like Heroes, that got cut short.
Oh, yeah.
It was obvious they had more plans, and we know for a fact they did, because some of these shows have talked about that they had more planned. Like Heroes basically lost half a season because of that, and it kind of killed the show. House of the Dragon season 2, kind of similar, and not because of the strike, but because of whatever behind the scenes stuff that happened before the strike, where they were told maybe save the Battle of the Gullet for next season. I think House of the Dragon season 3 has some stuff to prove. We know, Dennis, we know that the SAG-AFTRA strike didn't affect filming of season 2. Well, so that's a tricky thing. It didn't affect. So we know that the WGA strike presumably did not affect. I think that there's a fair amount of gray area here where we've been told by Martin, by Ryan Condal, the scripts had been rewritten. We weren't going to do any more on-set rewrites, but like shows do on-set rewrites all the time. So it's hard to know just how true that is. In terms of the SAG-AFTRA strike not affecting it, you're correct that because of England's very draconian labor laws, they were not part of that strike. It's a different union. Striking is actually could get them sued. Because the English don't like labor laws. I don't know why. But whether it had any effect on filming is hard to say, because a few actors have talked about how strange it was for them to still be filming while all of Hollywood was striking. So did it affect morale? Did it affect the final product? Your guess is as good as mine. But it didn't affect the overall arc of the season. I think that's true.
But what you were saying is that you're not saying that the season was affected by the strikes. You're saying that watching it, you felt like you did watching shows in 2008 that were affected by strikes.
Correct. That is what I was saying.
House of the Dragon was affected by some kind of corporate willy-nilly stuff that lobbed off two episodes off the end of it.
Yes, I think corporate contraction on our current era of prestige fantasy television. I think a lot of the studios were starting to contract. David Zaslav had become the head of Warner Brothers Discovery and was making cuts everywhere he could. Was House of the Dragon part of that? It's hard to say, but we know for a fact they were told that they're to trim down their episode count. They talked about it in the recent book that came out, the behind mm-hmm. the scenes of season two book. That one talked about how they originally were planning to do the gullet and then had to lose the gullet and lose essentially their final two episodes. And it felt like that in a way that was very reminiscent of that strike, even though this was not a strike cut.
If I had to guess, because it seemed for a while like House of Dragons has 110 episodes. The first season of The Last of Us basically had 10 episodes, like two were mushed together, but there was like nine. And I guess it felt for a while like, all right, we're getting back to this. Okay. And then my guess is Zaslav comes along and cuts stuff and they have rollbacks, and that's probably what did it. Not the strike exactly.
Yeah. I am nervous for The Last of Us, even though like I'm sure it's going to be great. I feel like they probably decided to make their cut where it made sense for them. But like season two is only seven episodes of The Last of Us. Like that's pretty short for having waited, essentially two years. I'm sure it's going to be great. I'm sure they made the choice from a creative perspective, but I'm still like, man, 2 years for seven episodes. That's not great. Do any of us like that? I don't know.
It's the thing, right? Like nobody in the world likes this. Nobody. Yeah. But they keep doing it because behind the curtain, that's what the economic reality is. I mean, whether it's strictly necessary or whether it's been massaged to meet other economic demands, maybe like paying David Zaslav's hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses. I'm not entirely sure. But it is this weird situation where like nobody likes it, but everybody does it. It's very bizarre. Speaking of a show that's taken too long to get back, but which is getting back, and I think they have made an effort to get this out a little quicker than other series.
They have. It's like a year and a half here.
Yeah, that's only not that bad. Is it March 13th? We got the new season of The Wheel of Time coming out.
Yes, we do. March 13th, which is like, that's less than 2 months from now. Wheel of Time is coming right around the corner. And why do you bring up The Wheel of Time, Dan?
Because today, Amazon Prime Video released a big old cache of glossy, high quality images.
Yes.
From the show. And we can talk about a few of them. Although before we do, some great comments here. Chris says that Doom Prophecy to see only six episodes. I agree. You don't need, I do not believe you need X number of episodes to do it well.
I agree with that.
It does feel like with some of these shows, they did need more or wanted to have more, and that the decision to cut back is not because that's what they wanted. It's because that's what got pushed upon them. But yeah, if you can do a six episode series, rock on, fine. But it felt like House of Dragon Season 2 especially wanted more than eight, but only got eight. But The Wheel of Time, another show that's going to have eight episodes. And, the third season, I do think also things improve with experience. I do think a show goes along, you have a better idea of what you can and can't do. And I have no objection to watching eight episodes if they're eight great episodes. And I hope The Wheel of Time Season 3 has eight of those when it comes in March.
Yeah. Totally agree with that. I am very hopeful that it's going to be a good season for The Wheel of Time. This is kind of a big one. It's adapting The Shadow Rising, which is kind of where the book series gets its footing a little bit more. So will the show similarly get its footing a bit more? I think is a pretty large question we have heading into this. So why don't we take a look at a few of these images? We're not going to go through all of them. They released 10 images, so you can find them online as soon as we get off.
On winterscoming.net.
Are they? Are they there?
No, but they will be. Just watching us after you're done, you'll be there.
Yes. As soon as we are off this podcast, they will be up on the site. So why don't we start... Taking a gander at some of these. So this is an exciting one. So as part of this season, So at the very front there in the white shirt, we have Randall Thor, the Dragon Reborn, the main character of the show. Standing next to him on our right is Moiraine. That's the Aes Sedai, who's kind of been following him around and helping him find his destiny. She's got a good floppy hat. And they are standing with a bunch of the Aiel, who are a desert-dwelling group of people, desert-dwelling culture, that we're going to be learning a lot more about this season. We met them in season two when Perrin freed the Maiden of the Spear, Avienda. And now we're going to get to see where they live. We're going to get to see who they are. There are a few I need to point out in here, new cast members. So the dude standing to Rand's, it's Rand's right, so our left, looking at the screen, that's Ruark, the Aiel clan chief of the Tardad Aiel, played by Bjorn Landberg. He's a new cast member. Ruark is a well-regarded, well-loved clan chief. Should be really cool to see him on there. And then the character all the way on the left-hand side of the image is Bear, played by Nukaka Coster-Waldau. That is Nikolai Coster-Waldau from Game of Thrones, his wife. She's playing one of the Aiel Wise Ones, basically their version of Aes Sedai. So, yeah, thoughts on this image of the Aiel, Dan? I just rambled a bunch, but I'm psyched about it.
I'm going to let you basically rock through all these names of these pictures while I sit back and go like, oh, right, Ruark. Yes. I did just read this book. I read The Shadow Rising, so I know who all of them are, and I recognize the Aiel Waste, the deserty winter wonderland. Yeah, this could be a big one for them because The Shadow Rising was the first time since the first book, frankly, that the show, that the book series at any rate, takes a big old step forward in terms of its narrative, its character arc. I'm looking forward to it, and they all look like a fun gang to go have non-alcoholic beers with. Next up, we got, I believe, Rand Althor, played by Yasha Stradovsky, and Land Al Mandragoran, played by Daniel Henney. Why does my memory work for things that are useless and not for like remembering like my distant relative's name at Thanksgiving? I don't know.
But we've trained
these two
way.
Are training, which I know happens a lot in the book. I haven't really seen much of in the show yet.
Yes.
Good old-fashioned fantasy stuff. Two guys with swords doing a little Charlie's Angels pose. Probably talking about some weird sword form, like Yeti tumbles down the back roads and making fans happy, both of the book series, because they love that stuff, and of the show, because they might cross those things, and that's exciting.
Yes, totally. The training storyline in particular, that's one that appeared in, it started in kind of The Great Hunt, which is the second book, and it kind of stretches for a few books. And they didn't have time to do it in season two. They had to kind of leave it out for, because they had to make some changes because the character who played Matt left, and that kind of snowballed into making it so Land training with Rand happened here in season three. And this is a really like beloved aspect of the books. Basically it's how Rand goes from, you know, a humble sheep herder to a master swordsman. Because even though he's the Dragon Reborn, he can't just go around doing magic all the time, because when he uses magic, it kind of makes him go a little more insane every time he uses it.
Woo!
So knowing how to use a sword is really important for him. We're going to see that this season. And this is, I'm excited for this. We interviewed both Daniel Henney and Yosha Stradowski last season. And both of them, I can't remember if Yosha said it to us or another outlet, but both of them separately said this was something they were really looking forward to in season three, these training scenes together. Cool. So yeah, love to see it.
Absolutely. And then next, okay, you'll also have to introduce these folk, because I'm not sure I have full command of the names.
I am ridiculously excited to introduce these folks, but I am going to skip one of their last names. So these are two new characters we are going to see a lot in the Wheel of Time season three, I imagine, because they're very important characters from the books. So on the left is Queen Morgaze Trakand. That's played by Olivia Williams from Dune Prophecy.
Of Dune Prophecy. Great actress.
Yeah, Chris Levenon, Dune Prophecy. You're going to see more of Olivia Williams. She's in a pretty insane getup here. Kudos to costume designer Sharon Gillum, who always goes off with the costumes on this show. Queen Morghese is she's the Queen of Andor, Elaine Trakahn's mom. So expect a very powerful figure from her. And then the woman next to her in the red probably looks familiar to Expanse viewers. That is actress Shorey Agdashlu, who is playing Elida, who is one of the Aes Sedai of the Red Aja. She's Queen Morghese's advisor. And she's a pretty intimidating, important figure in the overall Wheel of Time story. I'm expecting a lot of Shorey Agdashlu in this show. And she, you know, if you've seen The Expanse, if you've seen her in anything, you don't need me to tell you how good she is. So this is a power casting, these two.
Possessor of the deepest, darkest, like 18 pack a day, whiskiest voice you will ever hear on an actress. I will say one of the good things about the Wheel of Time existing as a show, because it has so many of these powerful sorceress characters, is that my partner, we just watch other things. And whenever like a badass middle-aged woman comes on, it's just like, oh, she should be an Aes Sedai. There are so many great actresses that just, oh, you just want to put them in the Wheel of Time because they'll be so perfect. And yeah. Shorey Agdashlu, try it. Is nice. Definitely maybe like suspect number one on that list for a while. You just hear her speak lines in that rich, creamy baritone voice she has, and you're like, I want her in an elaborate robe casting spells and blowing people up.
Yeah, totally. It's fun to hear you say that about like imagining the castings whenever you see like strong middle-aged women and other things, because that is one nice thing about the Wheel of Time is like there are hundreds of these Aes Sedai characters. So they have plenty of room to do these castings and get incredible actresses, incredible like heavyweight, really good actresses to play them. And yeah, so fun thing with her casting in particular. So apparently Rafe Judkins, who's the showrunner for The Wheel of Time, said that he had her on his vision board for Elida from the time they were first making the show. So like back before season one, even though like they weren't going to cast her for years, he was like, this is the person I always picture for this. Rosamund Pike shared a story when Shorey Agdashlu's casting was announced, basically saying how when they were filming the scenes in the Blight at the end of season one, Moiraine tells this story about another Aes Sedai who basically like tortured her when she was a novice. And she asked the showrunner, she's like, who do you picture when you do this? Like, help me like visualize it. And he was like, okay, picture Shorey Agdashlu. Like, that's who this woman is. And then years later, they have finally cast her in the show. So, yeah, this is one of those like perfect match. Can't wait to see her in this season.
The actors and the actresses and the wealth of middle-aged women roles is, I'm not going to lie, not an inconsiderately small reason why I enjoy the show and want to continue. Anyway, rock on with the next picture.
Yes. Not all the women or characters in general in this show are middle-aged. Here are three of our younger leads.
I'll take it.
I say younger, you know, thinking of like the Emmons Field Five, who are like the main characters of the saga. We've got two of them here along with Elaine. So this is an interesting picture on the, I'm just going to do left and right, like our left and right. Go audio ahead. Listeners, why are you watching this episode in audio? Go watch us on YouTube. So on the left, we have Elaine Trakahn. That's the daughter of Queen Morghese, daughter heir of the Kingdom of Andor, Queendom of Andor. In the middle, we've got Egwene Alvear, who we saw last season get captured by the Shan Chan and brutally tortured. She's no longer their prisoner.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
That was a highlight. I mean, it was awful, but it was a highlight of season two. And then on the right, we've got Nynaeve Almira, played by Zoe Robbins. This is a crazy picture because they are decked out in wild outfits. Once again, Sharon Gillum, costume designer, going off. Do you have any thoughts on this, Dan? Because this is a pretty crazy image of these three.
Yeah, I have two thoughts. One is the plot. I know that in your write-up of this, you talked about how... So there's a plot in The Shadow Rising, the book. Oh boy, here we go. Remember this? where Egwene gets trained in the ways of a wise one and learns how to more effectively basically project her consciousness into this dream realm called Telian Riad. I listen to the audiobooks, so I've heard that a lot, Telian Riad. And because she is not in the same place as Elaine and Nynaeve during this stretch of story. So how are they together? In the book, they meet in the dream world in Telian Riad to like kind of go over information because they don't have cell phones. They can't do that yet. And the clothes can change in the dream because otherwise it doesn't make sense. Like, why are they all dressed like... again, like Charlie's Angels, but make it medieval. Cleopatra 2025, yada, 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 space fixing. Let's talk about over-costuming. Is it possible they're going too insane? I think it might be. You heard of like flanderization, which is like a term that people use about characters in TV kind of becoming more of their most distinctive characteristics over time. Like they kind of get all of their aspects of them flattened and they just kind of become this signpost of a character.
Hmm.
I do think that as a show goes on and there's more conflict, it's usually good. You might be able to go a little crazy because with costuming and fantasy shows, especially it's about walking a line between putting you in another place. And here's a really interesting visual looking thing, but also keeping it grounded enough that you don't look at it and go, that's ridiculous.
I'm thinking this of is, like, which is fair.
Yeah. The Wheel of Time is pretty, has a lot of excess in its costumes, which I like. I'm into it. Like, I was just reading this post I wrote about the season two costumes, and they had like the 3 foot long nails for the Shan Chen people. They had the Ammerlin seat and like this crazy dress with a bed frame behind her back. Practically, she can't move in it. I dig it. I do think there's a line, though, where you cross over and suddenly you're at a Renaissance fair and you don't want to be there. And this is like, this is going right up to the edge there. But if it is in the dream world, I think you can get away with it because it's kind of an exception.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, them being able to create clothing in the dream world. And we don't know for sure if this is a dream world, if it's a vision of some kind. But I think it's pretty good, safe guess that this is not in reality, because these three characters aren't in together for most of the season if it follows the books. And, you know, just imagining them wearing these things, like, this has got to be some kind of vision or the dream world. The overboard with the costumes is an interesting point. I wondered that a tiny bit with Morghese's costume that we saw in the last scene, even though it's a wild outfit.
Oh yeah,
she gets away with it because she's a queen.
So you're a queen. Yeah, there are exceptions made.
There are tricky things where, like, with this shot, I don't know what the deal is, but I think the Wheel of Time has had to toe that line where the costumes, the really ostentatious costumes, have to still make sense. And I think that they got away with it with the Shan Chan because they were a strange culture from across the sea. They were very extreme in the way they did things. Their style reflects that in a way that I thought made sense. But that'll be an interesting thing to see as the series goes on. I think they've got a good balance with ridiculous, outrageous costumes, too, because like the Aiel costumes are, you know, they reflect the culture of the Aiel pretty well. Like they're fairly reserved with lots of spears. Like they're not the Shan Chan. They're not Queen Morghese. So but yeah, that is an interesting point, though, that I hadn't thought about.
I swear to God, we'll stop talking about costumes in a minute. Never. I think it's a fun topic, especially in a fantasy show. Even the Aiel things, like when I was looking at them recently, it's like, yes, they're more practical than whatever this is. It's still like roughing it by Prada, though. It's still like very sensible and kind of trimmed down, but still like, but still designed, still like kind of sleek and stylish in a way that probably would have just like put some rags on you. You don't want actual ugly. You don't want like real practical the way it would be in real life. You yeah. want practical and ugly, but for TV, for a TV viewing audience.
I think there are some shows that do the ugly, ugly well. I think Thrones did it pretty well, where it was like, yeah, they I had guess. A lot well, of gorgeous costumes, but they also had costumes where it's like, that person's in rags, and it was believable. It wasn't like, you know, rags by Prada. I think Outlander's another show that can do that when it wants to. Outlander's, they're another show that has a real good costuming department. Sure. So they've got really gorgeous, beautiful costumes, and then, you know, like when people are in prison, it doesn't look like they stepped out of their trailer and into prison. It looks like they've been in there for months, and it's terrible. Okay. But yeah, anyway, let's move yeah, on from this on. One. Let's talk about some other costumes in our next image.
Which oh God, is there the, are more costumes. Our there last are. One, yeah.
There are. This is the last of the images we're going to be looking through on the podcast today. To see the rest of them, you can go online. We will have an article up as soon as we get off this pod with all 10 images in it. But this up. Isn't. This is an interesting one. So here we've got Matt Cawthon in the middle. That's Donal Finn. Nynaeve, and then Min Farshaw is the character all the way on the right. I don't know who the dude in the sketchy fedora is. I assume he's trying to sell them something, and he's just some guy. But my best guess is this is in the city of Tanchico, which is a new setting we're going to get that is basically like a pirate town. So, yeah, we knew for a fact that Nynaeve and Min were going to go there. We had heard rumors that Matt is. So it seems pretty likely that this is going to be, this is a deviation for Matt from the books, but Tanchico is a really well-loved setting. So really Bye. Looking forward to seeing this in the show. Any thoughts on this one, Dan?
Yeah, they're changing the books is my thought on it. Look, so in the books, the big change here is that Matt, the dude with a plunging neckline, is elsewhere in the book. He's with Rand in the Aiel Waste. But it looks like they're going to change that up. So yeah. he'll be with this story, which is a fairly big change, because he does some stuff in the book. I'm not going to go into full spoilers, but that will be an alteration. Now it's an alteration I'm willing to go with. I'm not terribly attached to the Wheel of Time, and also I've enjoyed the show so much. I mean, or so far. Is this the kind of thing that would like tick off loyalists though?
Yes. I think it's I am okay with, I think the Wheel of Time has by necessity had to make some changes. You know, it is adapting a 15 book series across 8 seasons of television with 8 episodes a season. There's just no way they could do it straight. And even if they did do it straight the same way as the books, there are like redundant plot beats in the books readers kind of groaned through, because we all loved the Wheel of Time and it was good enough to just keep going. But like, there are plot beats where like you explain it to someone, like, for example, there's this mythic sword, Kalendor, that appears in the third book. Rand pulls this sword out of its resting place in a place called the Stone of Tyr, and it's basically the Wheel of Time's take on the sword and the stone. And we don't know for sure if we're going to see this happen in the show, because it kind of glossed over book 3. But basically, after I was explaining this to my partner, after Rand pulls the sword out, he just leaves it there in the Stone of Tyr. He comes back for it like 8 books later. So it's stuff like that where it's like the Wheel of Time can change things and should change things to make it more compelling for television. But I will say so in the book, Matt goes to the Aiel Waste with Rand. Some very, very cool, important things happen for him there. And I don't know how the show is going to do that. So I am nervous about that personally.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. All right. We are short on time and long on content this episode. So let's move on to one of our next topics. Brandon Sanderson, author extraordinaire, writer of the Stormlight Archive, Mistborn, one of the biggest fantasy authors around who does not have a major TV show or movie based on his work out. And he is pretty open about saying why that is, sometimes in very entertaining ways. He gave this interview recently where he's basically quizzed about it. Like, you've written the Stormlight Archive, you've written the Mistborn series, they've both sold tons of copies. Why isn't there a TV show or a movie? And he's just basically talking about, well, I've had offers. I don't think it'd be quite right. It's not time for the Stormlight Archive. I'll know when it is. Mistborn could be a film series, but it just hasn't quite worked out, especially if they do it the way I think would be best. And what I liked the most is when this guy, who again is a hugely successful fantasy author who would like to see his movies on the screen, one assumes, tiptoes up to the edge of just openly putting down other fantasy shows that are already on the air. I don't know if it's hilarious and admirable or like a real case of foot and mouth disease. I'm not sure. I can never decide. But he's saying things like, I'm not convinced that we have hit stability in the streaming market. Streaming has had a big problem with epic fantasy, and this has me worried. Rings of Power and Wheel of Time have not gone as well as I'd hoped. Shadow and Bone lasted only two seasons after a very strong first season. Streaming hasn't figured out epic fantasy yet. Probably the best one is when he talks about The Witcher and the Netflix epic fantasy show and where it's gone wrong, according to him. Epic fantasy has resounded poorly, Epic Fantasy has responded poorly to too much oversight from above, he says. I think that was The Witcher's problem. You had that visionary. It was Henry Cavill, and they didn't want to listen to him. So, well, there you go. And just, he's probably not wrong in a lot of instances. I do think that some of these shows have suffered for reasons I don't entirely know. I'm not sure what goes on behind the scenes. It seems like a mismatch between the people who are making them not really always having the best ideas for how to do it. But to just kind of air like the hearsay about Henry Cavill being a genius who left The Witcher in protest of what they were doing to it, which may or may not be what happened. It's just like hanging your dirty laundry out to dry. And I do wonder if that's part of the reason people won't adapt his stuff, or that hasn't adapted stuff quite yet. What do you think?
I think I agree with a lot of the things he said. I honestly think he's right about most of these things. I think Sanderson, you know, he is one of the nerds, essentially. Like, he's always been really candid about his opinions with his fans, like going back to just books and basically whatever. So I think the only time it really bugged me, or I was like, what are you doing, Brandon Sanderson, was when he ragged on the Wheel of Time season two, like while it was still airing, when he hadn't even seen it all. That was an instance where I'm like, you're not being very fair in how you're analyzing this, I think. But I think what he's saying here about the streaming market not being very stable, he talked about how a large part of streaming loves dual screening. So in other words, like Netflix has gone out of its way to request shows that don't take too much brain power. And there's been lots of like leaked documents and things from screenwriters that like Netflix often gives notes to like dumb things down so that people can like fold their laundry while they watch. Like, they don't want people needing to pay rapt attention. And that is just not really good for a big epic fantasy series. So I think he is right about all of that. And I think doing something like the Stormlight Archive in that environment would be taking the quick buck, and it probably wouldn't go well. And I think the context for that Henry Cavill comment, he basically said, and this was a little tongue in cheek, he really wants a Denis Villeneuve, his own Denis Villeneuve, who loves Mistborn or Stormlight Archive, who wants to spearhead that because there's a specific sort of marriage of like a visionary filmmaker with a series they deeply love and get, and like having that combination can make like magic. Like, he talked about Lord of the Rings and Dune and how it hasn't happened very often, but those are two examples where it did happen. And that's all he's asking, is something like that. And so that's, he was saying Henry Cavill was the closest thing The Witcher had to that. And it's hard. Like,
I mean,
I don't necessarily disagree with that. I, you know, we don't know what their behind the scenes situation was, but I do think Henry Cavill, from all of the stories we have seen that have come out, even like confirmed ones, like the whole, his, the character's horse dying in the second season, and the show was going to put some like stupid joke over that, and Henry Cavill was like, no, we can't do that, like his horse is his best friend, like this doesn't make sense, and he came back with a book quote and they used that instead, and it's like one of the best scenes of the entire season. So I do think he's kind of right with this, even though I have been a Witcher apologist when it comes to season three. I don't think he's wrong, but I don't know that it's helping his chances for getting more adaptations of his own work either.
If I were a producer and I saw Brandon Sanderson talking this openly about, like, I don't know, other competitor shows that he doesn't like and the reasons he doesn't think they're doing well, and I were given the option to work with him, I honestly would think, like, no, he's just going to like crap on whatever show we make. This might would be my worry.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard too, because he said in this, like, he doesn't think there's been a really good epic fantasy show since like the early mid seasons of Game of Thrones. He thought that was the last time it really peaked. And like, I don't think we've had one that has been on the same level as those early seasons of, like, you know, like season three and four of Game of Thrones, still at least as good as anything else that has come out, and probably better than most of it. And I like that he talked about budgets. He was saying, like, you know, those episodes didn't cost $50 million an episode. It's clearly not a money problem. It's clearly not a money problem that's causing this. So this is all from an interview he did with Polygon, all about adaptations and his thoughts on them. And I honestly have criticized Sanderson before with some of the flack he's thrown at, like, Wheel of Time in particular. But I think Brandon Sanderson's, he's onto something, and I think he makes some really astute observations that I have long held as well regarding, like, Hollywood kind of squandering its chance to do better fantasy adaptations. Like, he talks about how they tried to capitalize on the Lord of the Rings boom by, like, adapting a bunch of YA fantasy, not realizing that really wasn't what people who liked Lord of the Rings were looking for next. And, you know, kind of misunderstanding that, like, the Golden Compass is a different sort of story than the Lord of the Rings. Like, they're kind of geared toward a different audience age-wise. I don't know. I'm in Brandon Sanderson's corner with this one. I can't lie.
I think Brandon Sanderson is obviously a gifted writer and a businessman. Great. I don't know how good he is at playing the Hollywood game. I think it's a big part of it. But we'll see. I think sooner or later we'll see something.
I agree. I don't think he's good at playing the Hollywood game. I think he's probably made it pretty clear that he is not super great at playing the Hollywood game and just doesn't care because he's willing to wait for the right opportunity.
You need to play the game to get anything done.
I don't know, man. Look at how upset George R. R. Martin was about season two of House of the Dragon. It sounds like he's straight up not even it sounds like he's losing sleep. He straight up said he's losing sleep.
Oh, yeah. But that was like he was pushed to the edge. Like, yeah. Sanders was just offering this stuff.
That's true. I know we need to move on, but I just want to shout out Victor D. Giovanni says, I think the only way Stormlight Archive could be done is an animation like Arcane. Sanderson did actually shout out Arcane in this interview. He said since Game of Thrones, there is one excellent fantasy show, Arcane. And he said, but Arcane costs so much money and it's hard to reproduce that without an IP that has League of Legends behind it. So he said, Arcane, I guess, is proof that it can happen, but I want to see how it shakes out. And he said he hasn't given up on traditional cinema yet either. So we'll see what happens for Brandon Sanderson and his works on screen.
Man, he's worth paying attention to.
Agreed.
All right. We set that pretty high, tall high for ourselves today. Before we get to the Wick News lightning round and maybe what are we watching, I got to take a minute and just mention that David Lynch passed over this past Friday. Director, iconic, incredibly talented director of things like Mulholland Drive and Wild at Heart and Lost Highway and Twin Peaks and Inland Empire and Eraserhead and The Elephant Man and The Straight Story. Just like bangers all. I've been a giant fan for a long time. I wore my one piece of Twin Peaks merch that I own today, this shirt of Laura Flynn Boyle as Donna crying in class after finding that Laura Palmer is dead.
The premiere episode of Twin Peaks.
Okay.
Honor David Lynch there.
In fact, if you wanted to know how big a David Lynch fan I am, we have a couple pictures here. Literally last year, before he died, obviously, we took a vacation to Seattle, which happens to be a half hour away from North Bend, the town where Twin Peaks was filmed. That is the Double R Diner from Twin Peaks, where so much intriguing nice. Things go down.
Nice. There you are with
the Double R Diner just last year. Very happy to be there. My favorite was this image of the bridge from the premiere of Twin Peaks that Ronette Pulaski walks over after her horrible night with Killer Bob, kind of stalking crazed out of the woods, not understanding anything. We got to go to the exact bridge. That's the bridge.
Oh, cool.
I was very happy I got that. I want you to know how much I love David Lynch, how much he has affected me more as much as any filmmaker alive. Get me interested in doing this stupid thing I'm doing for you right now. I'm talking about movies and TV for a living. I think he's brilliant. I think it's time for a Twin Peaks rewatch. I love him. I agree with Victor. Twin Peaks is absolutely directly responsible for the era of peak TV. Without Twin Peaks, you don't get something like The X-Files. You don't get something like Lost. You don't get something like Game of Thrones eventually. It laid that groundwork for a weird kind of prestige sci-fi fantasy genre series that took itself reasonably seriously and led to everything else. He had a huge influence on movies, a huge influence on TV. He seems like a really cool, interesting dude. And the world of cinema and the world in general is the poorer for him not being in it.
Yeah. So even as someone who, you know, is not an enormous, and this is not a fan of David Lynch, but I'm not as familiar with his work. I haven't seen as much of it as you. I do fully agree that the world of cinema is poorer for the loss, because I think he impacted so many people, viewers, creators, you name it. And was just generally regarded as like someone making the art his own way that, mm-hmm. because he loved to do it. And that's really inspiring. So my question for you, Dan, is, so Twin Peaks is your obvious going to be a go-to David Lynch recommendation. If you had to recommend three other David Lynch things for the people like me who are not as familiar, what would they be for us to go watch?
Easy. Okay, first of all, this is my Laura Palmer wrapped in plastic Funko Pop, one of the Funko Pops that I own, and I own it proudly. Yeah, by the way, Victor's right. Twin Peaks did go a bit downhill in second season after David Lynch left to make Wild at Heart. It's still so compelling and worth just for the weirdness, though. So, okay, Twin Peaks is the one TV show he really made and is worth watching. My favorite thing here is Mulholland Drive. I love Mulholland Drive. Great movie. It's his masterwork. It's also a bit challenging. So if you want, the first movie to watch is probably Blue Velvet. That's his 85, 86, somewhere around there. Pretty straightforward Kyle MacLachlan starring drama. He gave Kyle MacLachlan and Laura Dern their careers. That's right. That's how important David Lynch is.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward, like kind of small town drama. It has everything you want in a David Lynch movie. It has like the kind of melding of eras, the intense style. That blue curtain in the background is a David Lynch curtain. He loves these deep nice. Blues and deep reds. That was there before he moved in, by the way. And then actually, Victor likes the Elephant Man is also a really good one to watch. I'm a more straightforward one. Mulholland Drive, I disagree with you there, Victor. I think it might be my favorite movie. It's definitely in the running, like top three. So I would say Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, and between those two, The Straight Story is his most underrated movie. A very straightforward, like a World War II 86-year-old veteran drives a tractor cross-country to meet his brother before he dies.
Wow. Okay.
Very unassuming, very straightforward, very moving. Loved it. Doesn't get seen enough.
Cool. Okay.
I love David Noted. Lynch. I think he's wonderful.
Those are some great recs. Yeah, I definitely need to expand my knowledge of David Lynch movies. So going to have to be watching some of... Yeah, Twin Peaks and some of his films, I think, in honor.
I'll watch Arcane. If you watch Twin Peaks, we can trade.
Okay, okay. That's a good way to sell it. Watch Arcane. Signed, co-signed me and Brandon Sanderson, and I will watch Twin Peaks. What are you watching this week? Shall we move into that segment of our show as we push time here?
Let's do it pretty quickly. I mean, I'm still watching Severance. I'm pretty well into it at this point. I have the screeners. I'm very happy about that. And I just got the screeners for the third season of Invincible in my mailbox today. And frankly, I'm looking forward to getting all over that.
Yeah, that's cool. I am watching Severance also. I've not seen screener, so I've only seen the premiere. But let me tell you, I've seen that hallway running scene.
Probably that rocked.
I've seen that probably like 7 or 8 times. It's such a cool scene. I read an interview where they said they filmed it over like the course of months. Like every time Adam Scott would be like, they'd ask him like, what's your favorite color of Gatorade? And he'd be like, oh God, another run, more running. Every time he thought they were wrapped and they just weren't wrapped. So yeah, I'm really enjoying Severance. I'm still watching Mythic Quest. I'm almost caught up. Apparently Mythic Quest was not canceled. I just assumed it was because they did 3 seasons and the third one dropped in like 2022. But apparently it's coming back this month, like a week from now, for season 4, and they're doing an anthology spinoff series starting in March, which feels very well suited because there have been some episodes in Mythic Quest that feel like anthology series episodes featuring like characters when they were younger or characters we only see for one episode and never again, and like a sort of cautionary tale thing. So enjoying that show a lot. The one other thing that I really, really, really need to shout out. So I finished this book, Death of the Author by Nnedi Okorafor, and I think it might be one of my new favorite books like of all time. This book is so freaking cool. It basically is the story of this Nigerian American paraplegic author who she writes a science fiction book when she's like really down on her luck. It takes off in a tremendous fashion and totally changes her life. And she, because of this, gets some opportunities for some slightly robotic types of tech. Her book is called Rusted Robots. So it's a sci-fi book about robots in the post-apocalypse in Africa. And kind of reality blends together a little bit as it goes on. And part of what makes it so cool is that there are chapters from this author's point of view. There are chapters of interviews with the people who knew her, like her family members. And then there are chapters that are from the sci-fi book she wrote. And the way they all weave together and inform one another, and I can't talk about it too much because I would never want to spoil it. But the end of this just is one of those things where it really recontextualizes everything. This is like, I like Nnedi Okorafor. I've read some of her books and enjoyed them, but this is like her masterwork. I think this book is so, so good. So yeah, Death of the Author, needed to shout it out.
Work. All right, I'm glad you finally, I'm going to finish it. I know they've been talking about that one for a few weeks.
So I'm glad
you lived up to it. I agree. Yeah. RIP author. Shall we wrap this puppy up with the WIC News lightning round, where we go through some stories we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them?
I think that would be wise. I think that would be prudent, even. Why don't we do so? Awesome.
Great. I'll ask you first, because you are a Brandon Sanderson expert. Daniel, 20 seconds on the clock. Brandon Sanderson, noted author, has begun work on Mistborn Era 3, which is titled Ghost Bloods.
Yeah, so Mistborn is one of Sanderson's main fantasy series. He tends to write them in groups, so like 3 books, 4 books, where it's skipping decades between. He's now officially writing his third era of Mistborn books. This one's going to be like an 80s thriller type of Mistborn, which sounds real weird. I have no idea what to expect, but I'm excited for it. All right. Here's one I know you were interested in, Dan. So Blake Lively compared herself to Daenerys Targaryen while she was working with Justin Baldoni.
I thought it might get clicks because this celebrity drama has been popping off like the past month. Have you heard about this?
Yes.
I can't possibly in 20 seconds. Oh, God. It's like there's a movie called something and Blake Lively is in a battle with the director over it. And Tex came out and she compares to Daenerys at one point in terms of she has dragons in her corner who the dragons are named Ryan Reynolds and some other guy. Just another chapter in an ongoing drama.
Yeah.
Daniel.
Yes.
Outlander, Blood of My Blood, the prequel to Outlander on Stars, will premiere this summer.
Yeah, we finally have a release window for Outlander, Blood of My Blood. This tells two parallel love stories for Jamie's parents in like medieval Scotland and Claire's parents in before World War One, whatever year they lived in. And I'm excited for Outlander fans because the main show is ending soon. So this is how they're hoping to keep you on the hook. All right, Dan, here's one I know you're very, very invested in. So I'm going to ask you it. Okay. It's a picture of the Ash Clan, the new villainous Na'vi from Avatar 3 from James Cameron.
I mean, it looks nice. I'll probably see Avatar 3, Fire and Ash, I believe it's called. Nice. I still think it's funny that it's just tracked Avatar The Last Airbender, another show where there are elemental clans and the Fire Clan is the bad one. Mostly that's my takeaway from it. Good for you, James Cameron. Keep innovating.
Nice. Sliding in under the buzzer.
Mm-hmm. All right, Daniel. Netflix has raised its prices. The ad-supported tier will rise $1 to $7.99 a month, and the premium tier, no ads, will rise $2 to $24.99 a month. How many subscriptions can I put you down for?
You can put me down for negative one subscription because I am
Netflix.
Strongly considering if I didn't need Netflix for work, I would cancel it because they just keep raising their prices. At this point, it's almost the same as Regal Unlimited, which is like the program where you can go to the movies as much as you want a month. And that's insane for Netflix, for a streaming service. You should be ashamed, Netflix. That's my takeaway. Shame right. on you.
Harsh words. I'm a harsh man.
Just wait till like 2040 where we're paying $74.99 a month for Netflix. I hate this timeline. All right, I've rambled. Dan, Peter Dinklage's Toxic Avenger remake is officially getting a theatrical release after all.
Cool. Yeah, Peter Dinklage, Game of Thrones, Tyrion Lannister made this remake of the movie Toxic Avenger, a camp classic from like the 80s. I never saw it. I was a little rankled that apparently they weren't going to distribute it at all because they thought it was too niche. And they just like, so you make a whole movie, it gets good reviews. It's a remake of a movie that does have a fan base. It's a little weird. And you don't release it at all. It seems like a waste. So I'm glad it's going to come out for someone to watch. Whoever likes this should be able to watch it.
Yeah. Totally.
Daniel, there is someone look through the code of a web page on the official Netflix site and deduced that the fifth and final season of Stranger Things may come out on November 27th, Thanksgiving. Not ironclad, but what do you think?
I think that's fairly, I mean, we're guessing here based on code on a website, but that would make sense to me. Netflix likes a bigger release around the end of the year. They've already got a few big ones coming earlier in the year, like Squid Game, One Piece, The Witcher, presumably. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Stranger Things over Thanksgiving and maybe Christmas. Plus, they like releasing Stranger Things on holidays.
We'll see.
Yeah, previous seasons were holidays. All right, I've got one last one for you. I want to shout out a comment quick. Victor says Brandon Sanderson has also started releasing his 2025 writing lecture series from BYU. This is a next level valuable resource if you're a writer. Yes, he did that a previous year. Those are excellent videos. If you are into writing, definitely check them out on YouTube. All right, Dan, are you ready for your final bolt of lightning in the lightning round?
Yeah, hit me.
All right. Robert Eggers is making a new movie. It's called Werewolf.
But it's spelled like without an E. It's like W-E-R-W-U-L-F. Funny spelling. Robert Eggers, Nosferatu, The Witch. He's covered vampires and witches. and also Lonely People, Pippi Willem-Dafoe in Lighthouses, time for a werewolf movie.
It's true.
He's like one of the auteurs. It's like him and Christopher Nolan and a few others are like the modern auteurs. Rock on. Whatever he makes, I'll be curious to see it.
Hell yeah.
And that is our show, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We are here live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, or 3 p.m. on the East Coast, noon on the West Coast. And I guess one in the mountains will throw you that bone, Colorado people. We're also available in podcast form wherever they're available, be it Google Play, iTunes, or wherever. Download us. Listen to us. By Julie. Good seeing you. Give us a like. Give us a listen. Tell everyone you know about us. Eggers is the new hammer. I can see that. Yeah. I like Robert Eggers is doing good stuff, says Victor. Thanks for watching. We'll be back soon. And for David Lynch, silencio.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.